Hi, this is Rev Yearwood, President and CEO of the Hip Hop Caucus.
And this is Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali, Senior Vice President of the Climate, Environmental Justice, and Community Revitalization for the Hip Hop Caucus.
On behalf of the Hip Hop Caucus, thank you for checking out our podcast, Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change.
And please make sure you subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media at Think 100 Show and at Hip Hop Caucus. Also, be sure to check out our Think 100% blog at think100.info, where you can find information about each episode and other important news.
Climate change impacts us all, and it's important to keep the dialogue going. We invite you to be part of these important conversations. Enjoy.
At times I thought we'd never make it, yeah. Now we on our way to greatness, and all I ever took was patience. I used to feel so devastated. Times I throw it, but now we on our way. And all I ever took was places.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. I am Rev Yearwood, President and CEO of the Hip Hop Caucus.
And I'm Mustafa Santiago Ali, the Senior Vice President of the Hip Hop Caucus. And this is our sixth episode, and we're about to launch our podcast that delivers real talk on climate change, environmental justice, and so many other issues. So we represent those experiencing environmental injustices. No sides, just the facts and stronger communities.
No sides. I love it. Just the facts. Oh, man. First, I want to just thank for our partners, like League of Conservation Voters and the Union of Concerned Scientists and all of our dear friends in the movement. Man, we love you. And definitely for the WPFW family, you are the best.
And we definitely want everyone to check out the show's blog at think100.info. Let me say that again. think100.info.
One more time for the good folks who need to hear that again.
Exactly, with the trifecta. Think.info, think100.info, and follow us online at think100show and also hashtag think100.
So, Mustafa, we have a packed and amazing, my mama likes to hear that word, amazing show for you today. We are going to get right into it. You know, normally we do our shout outs, and there's a lot of still grace for those who are in the pipeline fights, you know, here in Virginia, up in the trees. We love you, those over there, up there in Kinder Morgan, other for good folks. Listen, keep on fighting. You know, can't stop, won't stop. But we have this one shout out that I want to give, and that's because this is coming to Earth Day, actually, this weekend.
That's right.
April 22nd, this Sunday. So shout out to our friends at Earth Day Network, who have an amazing petition to end plastic pollution. So head to earthday.org for more information and check out hashtag end plastic pollution on social media. And big shout out to my brother Adrian Grenier and those folks at Lonely Well who are making that happen. Let's hop right into this. So we are here with Annie Leonard. Hey, Annie.
Hey. Good to see you.
And Deepa Padmahaba. I said that wrong. Hold on a second. See, I want to get that right. I practiced. Listen, it's so crazy. I actually practiced that, y'all.
Right. Hit him with the remix.
I practiced that and still, but I'm going to get it right on the remix. Padmahaba.
Yeah, I like it.
There it is. Yeah. Also from Greenpeace. I want to get it right because she may come here and take me to court. I'm not trying to have the good side because she's vicious. When I heard that she gets it, she makes it happen for the movement. So we want to make sure. So Annie and Deepa, Annie is the ED over at Greenpeace USA, and Deepa have joined us today because they have some important news actually to share that could have some negative implications for our movement. Before we kind of get into that, Annie, for our listeners who may not be familiar with Greenpeace, what is Greenpeace?
Well, I hope you've heard, all you listeners have heard about Greenpeace. We are a big international environmental organization. We operate now in over 50 countries. We do all kinds of global campaigns on climate, forests, oceans, democracy. The things that I love the most about Greenpeace is our independence. We take no money from corporations or governments, so nobody stops us from saying what we need to say, and our willingness to do nonviolent direct action. We are willing to put our bodies on the line if that's what it takes, and then thankfully we have Deepa who gets us out of jail and keeps us out of jail afterwards.
I know some folks who could use your help, Deepa.
She's busy these days.
Well, you know, I know a little something about that. But.
Right. Well, Annie, we know Greenpeace does a lot of work around stopping fossil fuels that are burning up our planet. Can you speak more about how you are leading the fight to end fossil fuel expansion?
Well, leading with lots of others. It's not just us alone.
Right.
So stopping fossil fuel expansion is one of our top priorities right now. And the reason is that if you look at existing fossil fuel facilities around the world, just the existing ones.
Annie, real quick. For folks who are listening, fossil fuel expansion is what?
New pipelines, new permits, anything that means more fossil fuels. Gotcha. We have the existing ones, and some companies and politicians want to actually make more, which is crazy because one of the first rules when you have find yourself in a problem is stop making it worse.
Right.
So we got to get off fossil fuel. As you said, think 100. That's 100% renewable energy. 100% renewable energy plus X fossil fuels is zero. Zero. We got to get off fossil fuels. And so what we're doing is we're really working to get to companies, cities, banks to stop making more fossil fuel infrastructure, because if we build more fossil fuel infrastructure, we will just blow past the global climate goals that we need to meet. So that's a real priority, and that's why we're supporting all those pipeline fights you mentioned, you know, from the East Coast to Kinder Morgan, all over the world. No new coal mines, no new fossil fuel drilling, no new ports, no new permits. We got to stop it and start moving towards that 100%.
And Deepa, I want you to tell me more about the some of the laws. Let me get that real quick.
Mm-hmm.
But Annie, just real quick on what you were saying. Why is this important for those who are just tuning in? You're listening to Think 100%. We're here with Deepa and Annie from Greenpeace USA, and they're just amazing. Love Greenpeace. But for those who are listening to you about fossil fuel expansion and the fossil fuel economy and transitioning from fossil fuels to clean energy, why is that important for us as humans?
Well, we're already seeing the impacts of extreme climate change, droughts, change in agricultural patterns, explosions of diseases, wildfires, floods, extreme weathers, and that's with only a tiny, tiny change in the climate in the global temperature. Scientists globally have said that we cannot go over 1.5 degree temperature rise. They're actually saying now it's really 1 point. If we go over 1 degree temperature rise, we're going to just see catastrophic extreme climate events. I know that sounds so crazy, it's just 1 degree, but on a global level, that changes everything from how we grow food to how plants reproduce, I mean, just all kinds of stuff. So if we keep using the existing fossil fuel, we'll pass 1.5 degrees. Like, we've got to get off fossil fuels, because fossil fuels is what's driving climate change. And we know there is clean, safe energy available. So there's no reason not to start that transition in full.
So that leads, and I know for me and Mustafa and many others, there are activists and folks who realize that we're fighting for the next generation.
That's right.
And that if we just allow for us to continue this pattern, it'll have catastrophic results.
Catastrophic results, and not born equally, especially low-income communities, communities of color, indigenous people, women are on the front lines of these impacts. And so it is a matter of human survival, but it is also a matter of justice. But it's not just for future generations, it's right now. Climate change is already happening. So it's right now. There is no time to waste.
So Deepa, we heard that Greenpeace has been targeted because by the strategic lawsuit against public participation, SLAP, suits because of your work fighting against the fossil fuel causing climate change. So can you fill us in on what that means?
Yes, of course. And thank you for putting that acronym out there. So just to back up, I mean, we all know, I mean, this fight, the fight against fossil fuels has been growing, has been expanding, and it didn't start with Standing Rock, and it's not ending with Standing Rock, but Standing Rock was this really pivotal moment where we saw a very powerful indigenous-led movement with, you know, big greens like Greenpeace and other groups stepping up in solidarity, and that scares the corporations like Energy Transfer Partners, which is behind the DAPL pipeline. And so in response to that, you know, in thinking about the pipelines that are coming down the road, their response in desperation was to try to criminalize solidarity work, First Amendment solidarity work. And what happened was in August of 2017, we were hit with a lawsuit from Energy Transfer Partners for $900 million.
Oh, hold on.
That's a lot of zeros.
Hold on now. Oh, please continue. That just caught me off.
Yes.
I was thinking 900 million. That caught me. Go ahead, Deep. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, that we all wake up thinking about that number. So $900 million, and, you know, it's a 187-page court document. And when you look at it, I mean, it's just completely full of racist overtones. What it alleges is that Greenpeace was the ringleader in creating this conspiracy at Standing Rock, that we basically manipulated First Nations and other indigenous groups to say that there were these issues with the sacred lands, with potential contamination to water. But at the end of the day, it was Greenpeace spreading these lies, and that we use this to raise money. This is fundamentally what is a slap suit. It is the intent. It is such a ridiculous document, and when you look at it, you see there's no way a corporation like Energy Transfer Partners actually intends to win. What they want to do is intimidate. They want to silence. They see the movement is growing, and they want to see, okay, well, if Greenpeace can be brought down, then all of you other activist frontline groups, you better take this message and be silent.
So what does this mean for our democracy, and what are sort of the implications for the movement?
I mean, the implications are terrifying. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, it is attempting to criminalize solidarity work. Mm. And these suits are nothing new. You know, there's one of the dangers with slap suits is there's a power imbalance. And so you have these corporations, for them bringing a suit like this is nothing. But when they go after community groups, going after individuals, the effect of the suit often does result in silence, and that's the danger of it. We at Greenpeace, in fighting these suits, yes, we're fighting for the organizations, but we're really fighting for the movement. You know, right. Slaps have been used against labor, have been used against grassroots organizations in Alabama, I mean, all over the country, and we want to say, you know, when you go after one of us, you go after all of us.
That's right. Well, let me say this on that regard. So why this is, for those who are tuning in, you are listening to Think 100%. I'm here with Deepa and Annie Leonard from Greenpeace, and they're talking about how Greenpeace is currently being targeted by these slap lawsuits. And the slap lawsuits are these strategic lawsuits against public participation. Let me just say why that's bad to begin with. As many of you know, when we do this show is not about Republican or Democrats, about humanity. This is not anything about anybody. All we would do is want to fight for the people. And simply what we're talking about here is we're fighting for clean air and clean water, and we're fighting for our kids. Because while this paper may be still around 100 years, maybe not 100 years from now, our children will be, hopefully. And what we're fighting for them is that they have a world they can live in. And so Deepa, you know, first Deepa and everybody at Greenpeace and all those who were involved, who were there, as far as with any protest, it's important, as Congressman Don Lewis would say, caused good trouble.
Good trouble.
You know, good trouble. You have to get in the way, and sometimes you have to put your body against the machine. So one, you know, I thank you, but tell me more about how this is a threat to organizing across all sectors, and how this is an attempt to, you mentioned how this is an attempt to just clog you up, but why do other folks in the Green Movement or the Civil Rights Movement or in Black Lives Matter and other movements need to pay attention to what's going on with this process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and, you know, I just want to preface this by saying that the law firm that brought the suit, that's representing Energy Transfer Partners, is Trump's go-to law firm. And the attorney has publicly said that this tactic is being shopped around. There's no plan to stop it. And so one of the reasons why this this lawsuit, and we have another lawsuit that we're dealing with, which is another slap suit. But why it's so important is because we have to give the message to these corporations that this tactic is not going to work.
That's right.
And specifically for, you know, for the ETP suit, the Energy Transfer Partners suit, our work was solidarity work. Mm-hmm. The other groups that were named, is we stood in solidarity with the indigenous folks on the ground. And there is a very blatant attempt. I mean, it is legal as repression. And we're seeing that, you know, with all of these movements, but there's an attempt to expand legalized repression. And, I mean, we can have a whole show about the role of the militarization of Tiger Swan, of the, you know, attempt to characterize all the folks on the ground as terrorists and the new laws. I mean, there's so many different pieces, but they're all very much connected. And this is very much a tactic. It's part of the corporate playbook to really criminalize activism. Mm-hmm. And it's very much in line with the new laws that we're seeing pop up around, you know, the anti-protest laws that are attempting to expand, you know, criminalizing very basic First Amendment work. So we're seeing this at all angles, and
right.
and but the what I see is the hope is that this is because they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
The corporations are scared, and they wouldn't have brought this unless we were doing something good.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the.
Deepa, you know, it also seems like very similar to what we saw in Uniontown, Alabama.
Yes.
When they tried to silence the community who was talking about and highlighting for the country the injustices that were happening there.
Tell folks about Uniontown so they know what you're talking about.
So in Uniontown, folks were dealing with a landfill that's there. Coal ash landfill, and many of you have seen some of the stories around the country about these incredible impacts that happen when people are located closely to these types of injustices that continue to happen. One of the reasons I'm so glad to have you all here also is because one of my early mentors was Damu Smith. Mm-hmm. And Damu actually was with Greenpeace, and he was always raising.
And this actually was his slot on this show, for y'all who don't know his story. This actually was his slot, his time frame. He had his radio show on climate here, WFW.
Yeah, Spirit in Action was Damu's show.
That's right.
But I remember Damu and all those different fights going against these huge behemoths in many, many instances, raising the voice of communities. And one of the things I think that these corporations don't get is that communities speak for themselves. So when you have folks who are in Standing Rock or who are in Alabama or so many other locations, they are saying that these injustices can no longer go on and that they are going to push back. And you guys are just partnering with others who are saying that we are going to push back, we're going to mm-hmm. stand up, but we're going to hold you accountable also. So sometimes I think folks don't actually get that people are going to hold them accountable. So. Thank you all so much for what you are doing and partnering in an authentic way with folks, which is so incredibly important.
Yeah, no, and for those who are tuning in, this is Review. That's my buddy Mustafa Ali. We're here on Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change, truly is. Today, actually, we're dealing with a little bit of a tough topic. We're discussing here with the fabulous leaders and organizers at Greenpeace, Annie and Deepa, and they're talking about how they have been just out here resisting, and I have my, if y'all can't see this, but I have my beautiful resist button on. I remember when they hung the resist banner behind the White House. We were always cheering. I think it was last year. We were all fired up and ready to go. Go ahead, Greenpeace. We making it happen. But this is an attempt to silence.
Yeah.
This is a threat to organizing all across all sectors, for my brothers and sisters who are in Black Lives Matter, for those who are in labor, for those who are in immigration, for those who are in healthcare, education. This is an attempt. So please understand the old saying is true. If you know we did nothing, then they came for us, so to speak. This is a criminalization of the First Amendment solidarity work. And so, but I want to, I take one step back. For folks who are listening, I think this is important. Greenpeace. And I'm a little bit of a climate historian in some aspects.
Right.
And so for those who are listening in, right after, we just had the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination
mm-hmm.
on April 4th. And then right after that, there was an election that took place with Richard Nixon and others in that process, in that election, and Nixon, who was the first law and order so-called president at that time.
But he broke it.
Well, you know, some things that go around. Let me just stay focused on this piece here.
We're going to leave it alone.
Leave that. So one of the things here that's important, though, is that what was amazing was that in 69, that when people would think that the climate movement would succumb, a lot of organizations were created. Mm-hmm. And so Legal Conservation Voters, NRDC, Union Concerned Scientists, young scientists and teachers who were up there in Boston, Greenpeace in 71, Rainforest Action. So and this is the same time when EPA was created.
That's right.
And so Richard Nixon wasn't any green president for the least, but because of the power of the people, it caused him to move. So with that, Annie, Greenpeace is about to turn 50.
That's right.
Looking good for 50 now. Looking good.
Getting better.
You know, getting better. Getting sued a little bit here. Fighting off things. But doing it. So as you approach that milestone, as you approach 50, because you're there in 2021, not too far from that. What do you see on the horizon?
I'll tell you, I've been looking back at all the things that we've done over our last almost 50 years and looking at what's needed. And I feel like every single thing we've done, and we have done a lot. We have preserved Antarctica.
Tell some folks who will take and know many of the things you've done.
We preserved Antarctica as a world park for everybody. We got a United Nations convention that bans rich countries from dumping toxic waste on mm-hmm. poor countries. We've saved huge areas of the ocean. We've saved whales. We've saved forests. We've banned chemicals. We've done all these big, bold things that when we first said we were going to do them, people said, you can't do that. That's unrealistic. That's too bold. And we did every single one. And what I feel like looking right now at the world is that all of that was great, but it was all practice for what we have to do right now. Because we have to do something different now, which is we have to unite across movements. We have to work on racial justice,
right.
Gender justice, economic justice, environmental justice, climate justice. They are all different sides of the exact same thing. And had we learned that back in the 1970s when we started, we'd be in a different place. But you know what they say, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. Second best time is today.
Right.
That's what we're doing
now. I like that. You know, and if I could just say something on that, which is so important, because for those who are listening, you know, one of the things within our movement, and shout out to folks with Green 2.0, I'm trying to push for diversity within the movement, and this is an important moment for us to diversify. I'll tell you a joke, Annie, so in deep, but this is a little so. I went to a meeting, right, and at the meeting we had activists on one side who were from on the climate side. Right, and they were hardcore climate activists. And on the other side, we had activists who were from, you know, with police reform and police accountability. And we were trying to break down the silos. We all, you know, were there. And so, in the meeting, they got all that said, we have to reform BLM. And so, the climate folks were like, yeah, BLM. And then the folks at police reform, yeah, that's right, BLM. And so, they were like almost giving high fives deeper. They were like, yeah, you would be, I would be BLM. We got to fix BLM. We got to fix BLM.
Right.
And so, we're like, well, hold on. We said, well, I asked the folks in the climate side, so BLM for you was what? Yeah, it's the Bureau of Land Management.
Oh, my God.
And BLM for you was what? Yeah, it's Black Lives Matter. Okay, well, let's take a step back then. Let's take this back. So, with that being the case, though, and that's what we're trying to break. Why is it important for us to not only fight poverty and pollution at the same time, but why is it important for us to break in those silos so we're not only doing the same thing, but we're saying the same thing as well?
You know, the world looks different from where you're looking at it from. And so you got to have people around the table that are coming from really different perspectives. Otherwise, you're just not that smart. The more people you have with different perspectives, the smarter and more strategic you can be. And it is the same systems of oppression that are fighting, that are oppressing black people and shooting them in their backyard.
Yep.
and blowing up the tops of mountains to drill out oil and clear cutting the ocean. It's all the same thing. And so we are either going to win or lose together.
Come on now.
We're not going to win.
Say that again. Say that one more time.
that we are either going to win or lose together, and I pick win.
That's right.
And that's why we are here, and that's why we hope so many people are going to join us, because I want to win this stuff, which means justice for everybody. It's climate justice, gender justice, racial justice. It's all the same thing. You can't take them apart.
Yeah, well, you know, Annie, Deepa, we want to thank you so much for being here. I think that's a great place to end this segment, because if we are going to win on climate change, it's going to take all of our voices, all of our energy coming together in an authentic way to make that change happen. So thank you all so much for being here.
No, thank you all so much. We'll be with you. If you need more information for Greenpeace, they can go where?
You can text RESIST to 877-877. That's RESIST to 877-877. And also go to greenpeace.org. We'd love you to join us, get involved, join the resistance, build a better future.
No, thank you so much, both Deepa and Annie. Thank you all so much.
Thank
you. And we want to go to our People's Climate Music Song of the Week. Actually, this is a special song. Actually, one of our artists, well, not one of our artists, but one of our artists we worked with, to create this song, which is a climate song. She was at Coachella. Turn it out. Give it up for Beyonce.
We built sandcastles that washed away. I made you cry when I walked away. Every promise don't work out that way. Oh, babe, every promise don't work out that way. Dishes smashed on my counter from my last encounter. Snatched out the frame, bitch, I scratched out your name and your face. What is it about you that I can't erase, baby? Whenever we promise don't work out that way.
Welcome back. Thank you so much, man. So, shout out to Greenpeace and all the good work. But now we have, man, this is just amazing. We have been joined by, first, the phenomenal senator from New Jersey, Senator Cory Booker. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to be in your presence, gentlemen.
Thank you. And also, we are also here with my dear friend, Tiernan, from the League of Conservation Voters, who runs the policy and government relations efforts with Congress and so many other things. Hey, Tiernan.
I thought you were a good hype man. She's the fearless, indomitable.
No, listen. Let me make sure for folks who are tuning in, make sure, because that's right. If Senator Booker said you got to be a bit of hype, you know, we'll definitely take it up a notch. So you are listening to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. And so welcome to you both. But Tiernan, you actually have some amazing news for us. First, can you kind of briefly describe what LCV is and what y'all do for our listeners?
I would love to. Thanks, Rev, for asking. LCV is a national nonprofit environmental organization. Our top priority is fighting the climate crisis. We're working very hard with our 30 state partners across the country to elect environmental champions like Senator Booker, who are going to not just be good votes, but wake up every day thinking, how are they going to protect our air, our land, and our water?
So Tiernan Sittenfeld, who is also the senior VP of government relations at the League of Conservation Voters, you have some amazing news for us today, and I want you to get right into it.
And can I say one thing? I'm sorry. I'm being terrible. You guys are never going to invite me back because I keep interrupting.
No. You can listen.
I just want to say, because she really downplayed. They not only do they try to elect climate champions, but they really partner with us to try to make change. They think of insightful ways to get folk woke to environmental issues. They corral senators and Congress people to do the right thing. And then what she's going to talk about right now, they hold them accountable. Because we often put people in office and they forget where they come from. She makes sure they continue to shine a spotlight that if you cross the line, we're gonna tell people that. If you do good, we're gonna tell people that as well.
And that's great. And listen, for me also, this is, I'm also serve on the board of LCV, so you can always give as many accolades and say all the great things that that the league does. So please take your time on that. We're all right. We're okay with that. You know what
we're
I mean,
absolutely Shannon? Okay with that. One of my very favorite senators, one of my very favorite board members. Of course, Mustafa is one of my very favorite people in general. So we are
no qualifications of Mustafa. Favorite. Period.
We don't get with you in a second. Shannon, do your thing.
All right. So we are really excited because we are right now on the coolest show on climate.
That's right.
Yep, we are so excited that we are releasing our Communities First, our report on environmental leadership from caucuses of color. It's now live on our website at lcv.org/communitiesfirst, so we hope people will check it out. But it shows the scores of the 93 members of Congress who are part of either the Congressional Black Caucus, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, or the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus. And I'm really proud to say that of the 93 members, 77 of them across the three caucuses, known as the Tri-Caucus, scored 90% or higher. Wow. So that is absolutely excellent.
And let's say for folks who are listening, tell them first about there's a larger scorecard. Right. For the entire Congress, and then there was this scorecard. So kind of explain the first scorecard for everyone, and then why this one is so important.
There's the scorecard across the board where we evaluate, as Senator Booker was saying, every member of Congress, how they vote on the most pressing environmental issues of the day, whether it's climate change or clean energy or environmental justice. And I actually am really disappointed to say that the Republicans outdid themselves. They did the worst ever. Literally, the Senate Republicans averaged a 1% on the 2017 scorecard. It means that 99 times out of 100, they voted against the environment, against public health, against the air we breathe and the water we drink. And so that is absolutely unacceptable. And that's why we wanted, with all the bad news coming from the Republican leadership in Congress that was reflected in our scorecard.
If my sons came home and they're on their report card, they said, how do you do in school? We got a 1%.
Yeah.
You had to try hard to get a 1%.
Right? It's unbelievable. I mean, it truly is breathtaking. Literally.
And it wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't the fact of the matter that we're dealing with clean air and clean water. And that, as you know, for those who are listening, who know me and listen to the show, this is not about Republicans or Democrats. This is about humanity. When I served in the Air Force as an officer, I didn't serve for one side or the other. I served because I was fighting for Americans. And so I can't understand how, and Tim, what you're saying here, that people who know that folks are getting polluted and getting bad water and bad air are failing that bad.
And I still remember watching it happen once early in this administration when they were rolling back. It was a CRA on disposal of industrial mine waste.
Yes. Wow.
And I was stunned that you have communities that are red states, you know, places like West Virginia, where West Virginians, New Jerseyans, we all deserve clean water. And we were just rolling back rules that were stopping large corporate coal companies to pour their wastes into rivers and streams. It was stunning to me. This wasn't, you know, and again, I've been a mayor, and sometimes you run up against environmental interests. You're trying to balance things all the time. This was such a clear black and white. Do you believe people should have access to clean water, or should these treasures, these streams and these rivers in communities be allowed to have sort of unregulated dumping? I was sort of stunned at that one.
It is. It's shocking. Fortunately, Senator Booker makes the right choice.
I was going to say,
every time.
Before Senator Booker gets on the soapbox, we gotta hear his score first.
My score? Uh-oh. This is the moment of accountability.
Tina, what was Senator Booker's score?
So I am proud to say Senator Booker got a perfect score of 100%.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Perfect score of 100%.
My earphones aren't working. Can you say that again?
In 2017, absolutely perfect. His lifetime score is 98%, which is really impressive. So, yes, we are very proud of him. We're delighted. But also Senator Booker and many others who are part of these congressional caucuses of color are not just good votes. So Senator Booker teamed up with Congressman Ruiz from California on the House side to introduce the Environmental Justice Act of 2017. Of the votes that we scored, most of them, because the Trump administration and the Republican leadership are so terrible, most of the votes that we scored were bad votes to harm the environment. So in most cases, the correct vote was to vote no. There were four pro-environment amendments. Two of those were offered by members of congressional caucuses of color. For example, Congressman Ellison from Minnesota offered an amendment to protect the air that we breathe, which is especially important in low-income communities and communities of color. Congressman Grijalva from Arizona introduced an amendment to restore environmental justice funding, which of course is so, so important for so many reasons. So this is, although there's so much bad news coming out of Washington and the attacks that
That's
we see
news.
From Scott Pruitt, there is good news. I'm here with good news today,
yeah,
which is so refreshing, right?
That's right. And I like also the fact that this highlights for folks that the false narrative that people of color are not engaged or committed around the environment, especially those folks who have been, you know, brought into office. So I'm so thankful that you guys are highlighting that.
Thank you. I mean, I think there absolutely is this sort of false narrative out there, because communities of color, low-income communities, they are hit first and worst by pollution, by environmental racists, Senator Booker has spoken so eloquently about this. I'm sure he's going to continue to. It is so encouraging and exciting to see so many members of Congress standing up and saying enough is enough and fighting for real solutions that are good for our economy. They're creating jobs. They're helping consumers. And we're just so excited to be working. There's a new environmental justice task force on the House side, mm-hmm. led by three members. We're excited to work with them, with people like Senator Booker, because there's so much opportunity here.
So Senator Booker, you got 100 and you're on the Think 100% show. So just all together. And so, you know, first of all, congratulations on that. That's amazing. And I mean that because people can't see on the radio, but I'm wearing a Flint hat. Was with Little Miss Flint this past weekend. But why is protecting the environment so important to you, and more importantly, to the citizens of the great state of New Jersey and everyone out there?
Well, for me, this is very personal. I'm the only senator that lives in an inner city community. You know, the median income in my community is $14,000 per household. I live in Newark Central Ward. Proud of my community. My community is rich with potential, rich with character. It's a great neighborhood, but I see firsthand in my 20 years living in this community that these environmental issues hit hard into communities of color, to low-income communities around this country. But I saw it when we first in Newark. When I became mayor, I wanted to do with the food desert. So one of the things I said, we got land, we can get seeds, let's create urban farms. And then the state environmental agency stopped us from planting in the soil because the soil was toxic. Mm. We know that the air is toxic because communities of color, again, if you're African American in America, you're three times more likely that your children are going to be hospitalized due to asthma and have these kind of respiratory problems, and that's the case in Newark. The water is poison. Our Passaic River, they used to dump all kind of chemicals, including Agent Orange, and it is a Superfund site. So imagine growing up in a community where you are alienated from your air, from your soil, from your water, when it's all toxic. Kids in Newark, kids in Camden still drinking out of bottled water because of lead in the water. Flint, Michigan is a travesty, but not an anomaly.
That's right.
As Reuters reported, over 1,000 jurisdictions mm-hmm. in America where children have twice the blood lead levels than the kids in Flint. So I saw that my children were growing up in Newark in a environmentally toxic area, and we needed to talk about the urgency of environmental justice. The rates of cancer, the rates of autism, the rates of birth defects, the rates of respiratory diseases, all of these things you see more impacting low-income communities and communities of color. And it doesn't have to be this way. When I saw that these communities are often the ones with incinerators, often the ones that have Superfund sites, often the ones where we're not making the investments to clean the water.
Right.
And so this was a issue I fought against as mayor, but when I became a United States Senator, I felt like I had a bigger purview, not only in Newark, but now up and down my state, I saw the same thing. The lower income communities more likely to have environmental hazards in their community. And then I saw in America, black, white, rural, urban, we have common pain, but we needed to start understanding we have this common purpose as well. Mm-hmm. And so I set out to visit other communities that are very different than Newark often, but that are suffering from some of the same challenges. Like I went to Duplin County, North Carolina. North Carolina has about 9 million pigs, these massive corporations, hog corporations, the biggest of which is a Chinese-owned corporation, Smithfield. And there's so many of these hogs, they have no place to put the effluents. Pigs produce 9 times the amount of effluents, feces that human beings do. And while in New Jersey we have 9 million people, they have 9 million pigs. We have waste treatment facilities down there. They have no place to put the stuff. They put in these massive lagoons that happen to be where? Low-income communities, communities of color. Going down there to see it with my own eyes, the stench in those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. You see the spray fields where they spray this stuff over the field. It mists over into communities. And sitting around a table of activists, environmental activists, most of them African-American, telling me just horrible stories. They can't open the windows. They can't run their air conditioning. Can't put their clothes on the line. Respiratory problems, cancers. They're prisoners in their own home. I moved on. Mustafa and I went through Alabama together. And again, anguishing realities we see in places like Tallahassee, Alabama, Uniontown, Alabama, where you see again these toxic coal ash that was considered a toxic hazardous waste dumped indiscriminately in a community that had no say over these hazards put into their community. You see again folks who've had their land stolen from them, not in a literal sense, but the value of their land's gone way down because these hazards have been put into their communities. And so when you have places like St. James Parish in Louisiana along the Mississippi River, literally the nickname, you don't even need to look up St. James Parish, look up Cancer Alley, because again, you have these industrial chemical companies that when I arrived, we looked at the EPA data, dozens.
But also to understand, break it down for me, what that means. When you say Cancer Alley, what does that mean?
Along the Mississippi River, the stretch of the Mississippi River, they have these toxic chemical companies that are putting this stuff into the air. When I arrived, we saw the data, the scientific data, about multiple times higher rates of chemical pollutants in the air. When we met, it was really one of the most, it was the end of this long trip. Mustafa was with me for much of it. Sitting in this small church on land that people have been on since slavery, and having my elders come into this church so excited, not to see me, but just that a federal official would come down.
Wow.
And telling stories that I had to fight back tears listening to how many people know folk who died of cancer or spoke who had cancer themselves. Mm-hmm. Literally being poisoned, the air is being poisoned. None of the people who own that company would ever let their families live next to the factories where they're expecting other people to live. And so there is a screaming urgency in this country where we are literally poisoning people and allowing that to happen and go unabated, disproportionately impacting a low-income folk, disproportionately impacting people of color. And it's one of those areas of the environmental movement that we don't talk about. I hear a lot of talk about climate change, as there should be. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about inherently, right now, our children are being poisoned by lead. Right now, our children, think about this, just this week, and I'm so angry about this. The EPA under Scott Pruitt have rolled back the flow that was to ban a chemical called chlorpyrifos. Now this chemical is sprayed on our food. It's sprayed on fields. Other countries have banned it. We know it does terrible things to the immune systems of children. It's on the apples, corn, and we were moving to ban it. And what happened with the EPA? They decided to study it more, which is a delay tactic, 5 more years. And if you're an agricultural worker, I sat with agricultural workers in New Jersey and listened to their problems that they have because they're directly exposed to these chemicals, not to mention them being passed down to our children. What do we value more in this country, the health and well-being of our kids or a short-term profit? And the reason why I say short-term profit, because concepts of the free market are being violated. a product, a good, is supposed to represent the full cost of that good.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But instead of what's happening when they're producing these things, they're passing the costs on to the public at large. The Passaic River by my home, it's been stolen from the, we can't swim in that Passaic River anymore. You can't get, you used to go fishing if you were poor in Newark a century ago. You go fishing, clamming, all of that. Mm. This public good was stolen by corporations mm-hmm. in the name of profit, when really they were stealing and passing on the cost to future generations. Well, that's happening right now. Do you know the economic damage to our country for not lead poisoning, but just elevated blood lead levels? Because what it does is it is directly related to low achievement in schools,
right.
inhibiting your executive function, which now that kid's going to get in trouble, suspended for acting out when really they're addled by lead. What it does to the economic potential of the most valuable unit of production in a global knowledge-based economy, the most valuable unit of production is a human being. Mm-hmm. And now we are saddling human beings with these, we're poisoning them and inhibiting the ability for our children to succeed. Not to mention, again, the other cost that these corporations are outsourcing onto us is just healthcare. Yep. Cancer is expensive.
That's right.
To send people to the emergency room, to have them get treatments, what that's doing to our economy. So this isn't the free market. This isn't corporations taking responsibility for the cost of goods and passing them on to those who are purchasing those goods. This is the lowering the cost of their production by outsourcing the costs onto all of us who are breathing in the noxious fumes, who have it in our water, who have it in our soil, and stealing from past generations. And so if you're a free market person, if you're just doing if you're a fiscal conservative, if you believe government spending should be lower, because remember Medicaid, Medicare, all these things have
costs. Right.
There's morally, economically, American competitiveness. Why are we letting the Chinese outsource their pollution to us in the pork production industry on places like Dupplin County and take the finished product? It's almost like the colonialism of old now happening to us through Chinese companies. So I don't care what perspective, you're a fiscal conservative, a libertarian, if you're a believer in the moral values of this country, it violates every principle there is, all in the name of short-term profits, long-term costs.
Well, Senator Booker, one thing that I really appreciate about you is that you actually get at it. And what I mean by that is that you go to the places, you spend time with the folks, and all the administrations I work for, I used to always say, if you're going to create policy, then you need to actually understand what's really going on the ground, and I really appreciate that. So I know that you, along with Congressman Ruiz, created the Environmental Justice Act of 2017. Can you talk a little bit about how that will impact our most vulnerable communities?
Yeah, and what that is.
Sure. Yeah. But first of all, you're kind of messed up because what he's saying about me, it's the truth about him too. And you both are activists. You know, one of my favorite books, In Search of My Mother's Garden by Alice Walker, she says the true revolutionary is always concerned with the least glamorous stuff, raising a child's reading level, filling out food stamp forms, because folk can eat revolution or not. The real revolutionary is always close enough to the people to be there for them when they're needed. You all are grounded and rooted in your communities, and you and I it was a great trip I took with you. You know, you have a what's the old saying? Who you are speaks so loudly I can't hear what you say. Mm-hmm. I just saw the way you dealt with folk and connected with folk. I really appreciate that. The Environmental Justice Act was not written by me in a bubble. It was really written in partnership with some of the best organizations, one of which is the one you're on the board of, and other environmental grassroots environmental groups, where we asked them what they need in federal legislation. And so the wisdom, and again, Mustafa is one of those folks who was inside a progressive administration, saw what was needed, and we incorporated ideas, one of which, again, comes from Mustafa's experience, which is, hey, codify a lot of these executive orders in legislation that we're dealing with environmental justice, so they're not just swept away by unfriendly administrations, such as the one we have right now. Give power back to the people.
That's right.
By letting individuals or communities take legal action that was eviscerated by Supreme Court decisions so that they can file lawsuits to protect themselves from the environmental harm. Wouldn't that be great if the people in Newark themselves could be suing companies? For federal permitting, you know, when you just say, I want to put a plant here, you can look at that one plant in isolation and say, okay, you get a permit. But what we do in this bill is say, no, you have to look at the totality of the circumstances in which you're putting that that into the community. So look at the cumulative impact of that specific plant, because now you have to suddenly realize that plant is next to an incinerator, which is next to a crisscrossing of highways. All of these things create a larger environment that is unacceptable, so we're not going to issue that permit. So this is a piece of legislation that does a lot of things, from empowering the communities to be able to fight back, to creating more restrictions on federal agencies to have to take into account environmental justice and make sure the progress that people like Mustafa did, who were in the belly of the beast, serving administration, a lot of the things that they fought for, hard ground that they won. Because remember, we're in the moonwalk phase, Michael Jackson's moonwalk phase, where you see voting rights being taken away, women's rights being taken away. A lot of these gains, we're losing them. So we want to make sure when we gain ground, we cement that ground, and that's what this legislation is trying to do.
In the climate movement, the environmental movement, sometimes folks have a disconnect between the voting process or a civic process, if you will. Can you talk about how important that is if we're serious about winning on these issues?
Yeah, I think that we all hear it. I when I campaign for my colleagues or even for Secretary Clinton, I go around the country, and sometimes I'm sitting in that barber chair, which you guys are laughing like, Booker, you don't got any hair to cut. I still have to shave stubble every once in a while.
I see it.
These are mean people over here. Sitting in that barber chair, and I get cynicism from the community. It's like, you know, why are we voting? Nothing changes. Why are we voting? And I usually have to break it down to them, all the things that the Obama administration had done that they may not see immediately, but it means a lot that you have access to health care that you didn't have before. You can't be denied health care. It means a lot that the Obama administration got resources to my community in Newark to help us with affordable housing. You can go through the things that people might not realize, but in Newark I could point to parks, to housing, to things that we appreciate in our community. And so we've got to understand that there is this design going on. I just came back from Florida on Sunday, where one in every five black people can't vote because of felony disenfranchisement. Mm-hmm. Now they have, if you're listening to this in Florida, there is a ballot initiative to change the Constitution. They need 60% threshold to get there, so please vote. But people wonder, well, how did that happen? Well, if you go back to the original state legislative debates about why this was happening, it was designed to prevent African Americans from voting. Mm-hmm. And so whether it was a century-old legislation, laws that have prevented blacks to vote, to the rolling back of the Civil Rights Act, to voter restriction laws like voter ID laws, or pulling out polling places from certain communities, or needing an ID, all of these things are working to suppress the votes of poor folks, of minority folks, and others. And why is that? Is because when you know, Alice Walker said, again, I keep quoting her, sage sister, you know, when she says that the most common way people give up their power is not realizing they have it the first place, is if African Americans, in this last Clinton election, if African Americans had voted about 85% or so of the Obama level of voting in places like Michigan, we would have President Clinton right now. Mm-hmm. And so we can decide the outcome of events. And I'll give you the example close to home for me. In 2008, when I went to vote for Obama in Newark, line around the polling place, I get up at the end of the line, I'm mayor of the city, there's no niceties. The woman at the end of the line looks at me and says, don't you think you're cutting in this line now? You know, no hello, mayor, how you doing? And I wait a long time to vote. 1 year later, mm-hmm. it's a gubernatorial election, a governor's election, I go no line, I walk in, hug the poll worker because she looks so lonely. Mm. And then Chris Christie edged out our incumbent Democrat. What's one of the first things he did? He pulls us out of regional greenhouse gas agreements, which is to stop that toxic air often coming from coal plants from coming into our communities. Regional agreements. Not only did he cut Planned Parenthood, cut the earned income tax credit, and everybody wants to say to me, when they see these things happening, why are the Republicans doing this to us? Mm. And I'm like, the Republicans didn't do this to us. We did it to ourselves, because the opposite of justice is often not injustice, it's inaction, it's apathy, it's indifference. Mm. And so this is a moment in American history where the importance of voting has never been greater. I've now seen, unfortunately, as a senator, what one vote can do I look at the times the vice president has had to come in and break ties. Mm-hmm. He was there today breaking another tie. And guess what this tie that he came to break was? Auto dealers and their ability to discriminate based upon race. We've seen through studies that different credit is given to different people, not on their credit worthiness, but on the color of their skin. And so if you think that the things that are happening don't matter, that one vote in the Senate, one Senate seat, could make a difference between Betsy DeVos, that tie had to be broken by the vice president. And so all of these elections really do matter, and they matter especially when it comes to fundamental things like our health and safety. What Scott Pruitt is doing right now, rolling back the Clean Air Act, rolling back the Clean Power Plant, you can literally measure the number of the amount of tons of these substances that are going to be put into our air, and those correlate not just to asthma rates, but they correlate to death rates of the amount of the toxins being in the air. And so, and who dies from these things? Mm-hmm. It's usually the most vulnerable people. I love how you said the first and the worst. It hits first to the communities that are vulnerable, and it often hits them worst.
Yeah.
You know, I know, man, this was an amazing show. We actually, if you're tuning in, you're listening to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change, and I think this might be our last question. Maybe we get one more, but I actually want to give you this question this way. I want you just, because we both know you, and you are phenomenal. Thank you for your service. Thank you for getting your 100% on the LCV's.
I appreciate that
scorecard. But right now we're in a time where Americans are hurting. Young children are marching for our lives. When Dr. King marched for jobs and justice, right, for equality, we now have children who are fighting and marching for existence. People are upset and marching because people of color just feel everywhere they go, their lives could be at risk. You have things going on where, man, this EPA and their folks are yelling "Boot Pruitt" every single day because they just can't believe that he would continue to do what he's doing. If you can just, not just even as Senator Booker, but just as just an American, knowing that people are hurting,
yeah,
and you could just speak to them right now on this show, what would you want to tell them?
Well, since this is one of the last thing I'll say, I first want to say that pay attention to what people say about other folks, because it's often more a reflection of them than who they're talking about. And I listen to the way Donald Trump talks about other people. That's more a reflection of who he is than the people he's criticizing. But if the flip side goes, you said some kind words about me, and I think that says a lot more about you and your graciousness and your grace than it does about me. So thank you for those words, but I push them right back on you. Within days of the Parkland shooting, Shahad Smith on my block was murdered with an assault weapon. Mm-hmm. The top of my block. I see folk in my community who have every reason to be angry, and anger is a productive emotion. Every reason to be cynical. Every reason to be to hurt. And I always say, if America hasn't broken your heart, you don't love her enough. Mm-hmm. We all should be hurting right now. But I just want to just close with the woman on the fifth floor of the projects, Miss Virginia Jones, who was my tenant leader when I lived in brick towers for about 10 years, which were the high rises at the top of the street where I lived. And Shahad lived in those buildings with me. And she taught me that hope is relational. You cannot have great hope without great despair. That hope is the active conviction that despair will not have the last word. And her son was murdered in the 1980s in the building I would eventually move into, and she never left. Now, she and I were two of the highest net worth earners to live in these low-income housing. She refused to leave because she loved the community so much, despite her pain, despite her hurt. And I remember one of my worst days in my journey as an adult was in 2004, the first time I'd ever been. A young man was shot. I was right there trying to stop him from bleeding to death. It is one of the most gruesome things in the world you've ever seen. Foamy blood coming out of his mouth, blood pouring from his chest. And I still remember the chief of police, the police director for the mayor I ran against was there. To this day, he says, I looked in shock. And I still remember what Ms. Jones did to me. I wept through the night. angry at my country, blackness filling my heart and soul. Next morning, I come out and I see Miss Jones across the courtyard. She opens her arms for me. She didn't even say a word. She just knew I was hurt, and I ran over. She hugged me, held me. I started crying again. She rubbed my back, and she said two things over and over again to me. It's just two words over and over. She said, stay faithful, stay faithful, stay faithful. Mm-hmm. And so we've come this far by faith, man. We've gone, our ancestors have gone through more worse trials, but they stayed faithful. That worse heartbreak, worse tragedy, they stayed faithful. And we can't give up now. We've got to carry this torch. The short time we're going to be holding, we've got to gain some ground and hand it to the young folk and let them run.
This is Reverend Lennox Yearwood Jr.
And this is Mustafa Santiago Ali.
We hope you enjoy this episode of Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. We have more episodes featuring stimulating conversations with some of today's most important and hottest figures in the climate and environmental movement and beyond.
Rev and I invite you to continue listening to more episodes and subscribe to our podcast. Visit think100.info for more. We're opening up a dialogue on climate change and would love for you to join the conversation. So subscribe now, and also don't forget to follow us on social media at Think 100 Show and at Hip Hop Caucus.
Thanks again so much, and keep listening. All power to the people.